We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From brand new Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, I know what I'm about to tell you is going to be hard to believe at this moment. It's Friday.
It's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Weekend. Partying, partying. Partying, partying. Fun, 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 fun. Looking forward to the weekend.
Thanks so much for being with us. Busy show coming up. Full disclosure, as we mentioned on the last show, Adam and I recording this podcast a little earlier than we normally do due to the travel for the Pitt football game last night. I was just giving you some suspense there, Adam, about what happened during the Pitt game. So you know what happened. We don't know what happened. Future Jones and Adam know, but present Jones and Adam don't.
If we still played Sad Friday, we wouldn't know which Friday to play.
Yeah, we wouldn't know which Friday was more appropriate. Hopefully it's the normal Happy Friday. We'll talk about that just a little bit in just a second. We have an interview with John Bunting, former Tar Heel head football coach, which we'll discuss in a moment. And Adam and I give you a virtual tour of brand new Podworld headquarters. Adam, what a bonanza.
It's virtual in the sense that we're here and you're not.
Right. Yeah, it's not like we're going to show a hologram in your house.
Right. Like, don't put on your VR goggles.
Not yet. That's coming later.
Wait until Coach Bunning gets here.
But before we get started, a reminder that the pod is brought to you by Pinehurst Brewing Company. Located in the historic steam plant building in the village of Pinehurst. If you, like Adam is, are looking for great golf and great beer, beer, visit Pinehurst and see what's on tap. Oh, clever usage of words. The Pitt game was last night. Now, again, Adam and I don't know what happened. But Adam, this is what I thought we'd briefly do. If the Tar Heels won the game, here's what I think happened. I think Carolina mitigated Pitt's pressure somehow. They used their screen game, draw game, quick passing game to their advantage. I think maybe the Tar Heels got some kind of crazy touchdown, like maybe a punt return score or a scoop and score, something crazy like that to help them out. And I think Carolina's secondary took a step forward from what we saw over the last couple of games. If the Tar Heels didn't win, I think Pitt's pressure was the problem. I think Carolina wasn't able to get a run game going. And so they were forced to throw. And I'm guessing that Pitt was able to possess the football and use that short passing attack to hold on to the ball and move down the field. Those are the two things I could see happening if the Tar Heels were successful or not successful.
If the Tar Heels weren't successful, perhaps Kenny Pickett ripped off maybe a long run. He can occasionally use his feet as well as his arm. If the Tar Heels were successful, I think you're right. I think maybe a key turnover. I think the offensive line did a great job, gave Sam Howell some time, and he was able to burn the Panthers down the field. No drops for the Carolina receivers. I choose to prefer the latter scenario rather than the former.
So you know we don't know, but hopefully the Tar Heels were successful. We can talk about it more in full on the first show next week. Adam, we do know that you have a UNC Healthcare Champion Watch brought to you by UNC Healthcare. The team at UNC Healthcare dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds. That includes you and your family. See their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. Who are we watching this weekend, Adam?
Our eyes are on Carmichael Arena.
To Carmichael we go.
If you are coming to the Carolina Gardner Webb game tonight against the Running Bulldogs, why not come to town a little earlier? 5 o'clock, women's basketball and our bro Courtney Banghart against Charleston Southern at 5 o'clock. You can do the basketball doubleheader.
A little doubleheader.
You might have time to get a little something to eat in between even.
Yeah.
And you get to see a game in Carmichael. You get to see a game in the Smith Center. I think that's the way to go as you could take in both women's basketball and men's basketball.
Carolina and Gardner Webb tonight at 9 o'clock. A couple things to keep an eye on for the Tar Heels is Armando Bacot's availability. And if he is able, after missing a large majority of the UNCW game, I think, you know, also, Adam, I think you could say, well, if the Tar Heels can get out to a sizable lead, then maybe they do their rotation a little differently. But honestly, where are you going to go? I don't think there's a whole lot of options that the Tar Heels aren't using right now. They have their blue team, but I don't know if Robbie O'Han and Shea Rush and Caleb Ellis and those guys are going to get a whole lot of elevated minutes. Not saying that they're not valuable to the team, but I don't know if they're going to get a whole lot of elevated minutes regardless of situation, unless it's the end of the game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you'd like to get the first five, and especially Brooks and Anthony, more rest, but I'm not sure all the personnel is there right now. In best case scenario, though, Brooks and Anthony don't play 35 plus tonight. They play maybe 31 or 2.
Right. Let me ask you, if you know any Tar Heel fans that work selflessly to improve the lives of others and their communities. LS Tractor wants to know about them. If you do, LS Tractor and the Tar Heels have partnered up to recognize hometown heroes from throughout the state. Visit goheels.com/hero to nominate someone you know for a chance to be recognized on the court at an upcoming Carolina basketball game. LS Tractor, proud partner of Carolina Athletics. Okay. Adam, we have the John Bunning interview, which we're going to get to in just a second. First, though, Adam, would you like to hear from HelloFresh?
Please.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Thanks, HelloFresh. Good stuff. Okay, we talked to John Bunning. And I think it's fair to say everybody wishes John Bunning had more success than he did. I like John Bunning. John Bunning is a terrific Tar Heel. He's just a fun person. And it just didn't work to the level that he wanted it to work, or that a lot of people wanted it to work. He had that very nice first season. And then, for a multitude of reasons, some of which he'll discuss You know, things just didn't work for a couple of years after that, and then you felt like maybe it was getting back, and it just never happened on a consistent enough basis for it to work any longer than it did. And he was here for a while. I mean, he was the head coach from 2001 through 2006, and it just unfortunately didn't work as much as he or most people wanted it to work.
But even today, when you hear him talk about it, you can tell exactly what you could tell then, which was this was the job he always wanted, the job he had always hoped for. He got to do it and was successful for a certain amount of time and then was not as successful a certain amount of time. And it was interesting to hear with the benefit of over a decade now of perspective what he would and would not have done differently.
So we're going to get to that interview in just a second, but we're going to start off before we do it with our 5-second challenge. And it's brought to you by the Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina, because texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At highway speeds, that's like driving the length of an entire football field with your eyes closed. Trusted choice, Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel, so don't text and drive. Go to trustedchoice.com/goheels. Find an independent insurance agent near you to learn more. So Adam is now in a sequence where he will have 2 straight weeks of being the question asker, and I am the question answerer, since I had to clean up for Adam this past Friday.
2 weeks in a row, this is a big honor for Cole Anthony.
Oh.
As he will be the subject of the 5-second challenge for 2 weeks in a row.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Cole Anthony, you've heard of him.
I have.
He had double-doubles in his first 2 Tar Heel games. There are 4 other individuals who had double-doubles in their first 2 Tar Heel games. Hear the way I ask the question. I'm pulling up my stopwatch.
Man, okay. So 4 players who had double-doubles in their first 2 Tar Heel performances.
That is correct.
Man.
Can you name those 4 in the 5 seconds that begin now?
Tyler Hansbrough, J.R. Reed, Bob McAdoo, Lenny Rosenbluth.
Stop.
Was I anywhere close?
You got 1. Lenny Rosenbluth.
Okay.
Not a bad start for Lenny, as he went 30-23 and then 37-25 in his first 2 games.
37-25. Wow.
Against South Carolina.
Billy Cunningham, C1?
No, surprisingly. I would have guessed that one too. Rusty Clark. Larry Miller.
Okay.
And then I believe the only one who also did it as a freshman. His name's on that wall right over there.
Sean May. Wow.
Double-doubles in his first 2 Tar Heel games.
I did very poorly in that. That was a hard 5-second challenge.
Oh, yeah. That's purely one where you just sort of guess on common sense, like Billy Cunningham, for example.
Right.
That makes sense.
I'm surprised Tyler didn't do it, but I don't. I mean, maybe not. Maybe I'm not surprised. J.R. Reed was my dark horse guess. Had a good freshman year.
Yeah.
Great freshman year. And then Bob McAdoo, I went because you stressed Tar Heel so much. I thought maybe Bob McAdoo would be the choice.
Yeah.
And at least I got 1.
Well, and I think you look at those names, Rusty Clark, Sean May, Larry Miller, Lenny Rosenbluth. That's pretty good company.
Yeah. And, I mean, the fact that Cole Anthony has done it from the guard spot is clearly impressive. And he's done it with rebounds both. I mean, it's 21 rebounds, all of them defensive, through 2 games.
I want to throw out another one that didn't make the cut for 5-second challenge, but I think this will be something fun. If you're coming to the Gardner Webb game, you can say this to your buddy, and you'll stump him. Cole Anthony, 54 points in his first 2 games. I think we can probably all guess, there's only 2 Tar Heels who have as many or more points in their first 2 games. So we know 1 because we just talked about him, Lenny Rosenbluth. He had 67. Good start, Lenny. The other one who also had 54 points in his first 2 Tar Heel games, I believe that no one listening knows this.
Mm.
Donald Washington.
I would guess not many people got that.
And so that gives us the opportunity to provide a little bit of backstory on Donald Washington, who's important in Carolina history. He didn't stay at Carolina very long. He only played one season, broke his foot in the only season that he played, or some part of his lower body, might have been his leg. I think he only played 7 or 8 games. The reason Donald Washington is important, other than he had the same amount of points in his first 2 games as Cole Anthony, he was coached in high school by John Thompson. And that Coach Smith's recruitment of Donald Washington is how he met John Thompson and how those two first became friends. And in fact, I think I remember in this right, and if not, I'll just make it up. John Thompson said when he received the Dean Smith Award that he really didn't necessarily want Donald Washington to go to Carolina. But as he was exposed more to the Carolina program, exposed more to Dean Smith, really grew to become great friends with Coach Smith, Coach Guthridge, and developed, of course, a great appreciation for Carolina basketball. So there's your backstory on Donald Washington.
Yeah, learn a little something here on the pod this week, Adam.
I didn't think that was a fair 5-second challenge because there's absolutely no way anyone would guess Donald Washington.
No. That is a good one, though. Donald Washington.
26-28 in his first 2 games.
Pretty good start. Okay. Our guest today is John Bunning, former Tar Heel head coach. We will get to that. Then coming out of the Coach Bunning interview, we have our tour of the brand new Pod World headquarters where we discuss some of the fun items that we have up here on the shelves. Adam, anything else before we get to our John Bunning interview?
I'm ready to hear from Coach Bunning.
Let's do it
now. I'm consumed by football.
Adam's a competitor. Let's get to it now here on the Carolina Insider.
Jones, are you ready?
I
don't think you are.
I am excited for this one, Adam. We have been talking about having this gentleman on with us for a long time. Glad we could finally make it happen.
John Bunning with us on the podcast today. Coach, we really appreciate you giving us a few minutes.
It's been a couple years since we've been talking about this, so I'm enjoying being back in Chapel Hill. I get very emotional.
You know, good. That's good.
Driving up 54, going up to the top of the hill, what I call the notch. That's the notch when I used to come in through the buses, and I always remember it as both a player and of course, as a coach. So my favorite Pink Floyd tune happened to be on, called High Hopes, as I approached the notch.
It all came together.
It was meant to be today. So here it is, and we're ready to roll.
I have told that story on this podcast before,
yep,
of riding on the bus with you, going up the hill on 54 into campus, but you tell it a million times better than I do. What is it like for you when you come up, especially in the fall, the leaves are changing a little bit? What is that like as you make that drive?
It's the greatest, you know, visual experience that I've ever had. And to be the leader of our program and have the players on the bus and be able to somewhat share it with them as we go up. And they knew that that was my favorite part of the drive. And of course, right now we're getting close to where? The old well, where we'd get off at and make the old well walk. So that 2 or 3 minute span was brought out a lot of memories and emotion in me, and it did likewise today.
Coach, catch us up on what's going on in your life. What you're doing, what's keeping you busy, what's going on?
I'm not real busy. I try to do things now that are very convenient, and coaching is not one of them. I got out of the cave and got back into the cave for a little bit out in Kansas City, and that sealed it for me about coaching, unless that was the right pro team. And as a matter of fact, Andy Reid and I had a discussion about coaching linebackers in Philadelphia because that's my second home right up there. And he chose Juan Castillo, his offensive line coach, to be his defensive coordinator. That's not a place for me. And I'm glad I didn't, because they all got fired after that season. And I don't need to be fired anymore, you know? I've been fired enough. And I am now living, sold our home down at the beach which was a beautiful home and was for sale for a couple of years, high end. We're now in Naples, Florida, living in a 27-hole golf course community. And I'm not a very good golfer, but I still like to play.
There you go.
I like to compete. And we have our cabin in Maine. So we got the best of both worlds right now. My wife loves Naples. She loves Maine. She's out there playing golf. She's playing pickleball. She got the most improved player. And you guys know her. You know she's a little bit competitive, right?
Everyone else in the league was killed. We don't know what happened.
That's right. So she got the most improved player last spring, and she's also now taking boxing lessons.
Oh, wow.
So that's a little frightening for me.
You got to stay on your toes at home.
You know, I have my last year in the 60s. I turned 69 in July, and I'm hopeful to continue to be in good health, mentally, emotionally, and mostly physically. I gotta take care of myself. It's hard taking care of this beat up body. 13 years on that Philly Astro turf has taken a toll, and you know, my knees were replaced, which is good, and they've been holding up since 2007, and knock on wood, they'll continue to do that. So. Staying healthy, having fun with my family, extended family, my teammates, who I'll see later on tonight, which is always such a big pleasure and also emotional for me. But that's what I'm up to.
Coach, when you were here, we used to love hearing you talk about the Dooley days and being a player under Coach Dooley. What was it like to be a Tar Heel football player in the Dooley era?
Well, you know, it's interesting talking with one of my former teammates, a guy by the name of Harper Donahoe, didn't see the field a whole lot every once in a while, but we were neighbors in Victory Village where I lived with my wife and child, and he had a wife and a child, and so we got to be very good friends. I talked with him the other day, and he reminded me, and I'd forgotten about that, Coach Dooley's record over the 6 years, the first 6 years, improved each and every year. There was some weeding out of some of the players. Back in that day and age, the scholarships were unlimited. Okay, you could have as many guys on scholarship as you wanted. So I came in a class between 40 and 45 players.
Holy cow.
Okay. And when we finished, I think we had 12 seniors. So there was a reckoning. You had to be good to get out on that field, but you had to be even tougher to remain on the field and remain with the program, because it got very difficult at times. Spring practice, you know, there was unlimited time. You could be out in the field. You know, we'd come into Keenan here on Saturdays, and we get into the goal line period, and we only had like four plays that they ran, but we ran them for an hour.
You know, halfback dive.
We're listening to the bell. I mean, I got to love the bell right here, and the bell tower, and it in part was because we could time things a little bit, because we didn't wear watches out on the practice field. So it was an absolute battle of the mind and the soul to remain in the program. But as we got better, things got a little easier, and they never were easy. But there was nothing like playing the game out here in Keenan, in my vision, in my time here. And when I left here, one of the things I said to my wife was, hey, someday I want to get back here. This is where I want to be in some capacity. And, of course, every time the job didn't open very many times.
Right.
But every time it did open, I would talk. And of course, I'd talk with John Swofford, teammate of mine, who was tough enough to stay in there and finish his career. I mean, he went through holy hell a couple spring balls. He really did. And I thought to them, are they trying to run him off? He wore number 44. I wore number 43. And back then, that's how we had one big square in the locker room, so I sat cheek to cheek next to him, okay? And I can remember once or twice him coming in and says, are they trying to kill me? What are they trying to do? I said, Johnny, just hang in there, man. We need you. He became a solid defensive back for us. I mean, he was came in as a quarterback and got busted up in his shoulder and ended up being a really good defensive back and a really big part of our team, great leadership. And, of course, look what the guy's done. He's just amazing. So a lot of good things. I'm going to see my teammates tonight down at my favorite restaurant here. I'll call it Pozzo's, and that's what it is over there in Southern Village. You can take that out, Jones.
No way, we're leaving it in. If it's good enough for you, it's good enough for everybody.
I love that place, and I love the owner. He's a great chef. But I will get emotional seeing my teammates tonight. Here it is, 50 years later. We still love being around each other, I guess because of the sacrifice. And we became winners. And Coach Dooley was a winner. Pretty amazing guy.
So when the job came open in 2001, right there, right. In that time period, what happened? Take us through that process of how you, that time, became the head coach.
That's an interesting process, of course. And we feel like Frank Beamer was going to be the next head coach after Torbush.
Correct.
Went down. And it's my understanding, because I'm still very close to Billy Height, who was one of our yep. tailbacks, that Beamer had agreed and went back to Blacksburg and apparently had a talk with him and maybe some others and declined the job. At that time, here's what I perceive happened. I know that some people had been calling Dick Bedore, and I know one of them was Dick Vermeil, and I know that Paul Houlihan, who is very close to Dick Bedore, who was executive director of the Sugar Bowl, mm-hmm. put in some real good words for me. I had come from St. Louis, where we had won a Super Bowl, down to New Orleans, and our defense went from 27th or 28th to like 6th. And we won the first playoff game in New Orleans Saints history that year. So I think Huli did me a big favor, and I had Dick flew down. We had an interview right near our training complex there in Metairie, and next thing you know, I'm flying up here. And it's kind of interesting because I have my interview. I think everything's going well. I'm walking with Rick Steinbacher, one of my favorite people in the world, great football ops guy, doing a great job in sports marketing now. I'm walking down, and he's going to, I guess, get me to my plane. And I say, well, where do we go from here? He goes, well, I think we only have one more interview. I said, oh, really? He goes, I said, well, who is it? He goes, Marty Schottenheimer. I said, Marty Schottenheimer? My first meeting with Marty Schottenheimer out in Kansas City, he asked me the question, what do you want to do with your career? Do you want to be coordinator? What would you like to do? I said, Coach, to be honest with you, I'd like to be the head coach of North Carolina. And Marty says, you know, I think that's a pretty cool job too. And so here I'm leaving the building, and Marty's going to be next. How about that?
That's wild.
Pretty crazy.
Yep. Yeah.
Small world.
So you get the job in fall, winter of 2000.
All right.
Next season rolls around 2001. You're starting off easy. You're going to Oklahoma. You're going to Texas.
Maryland.
And you're going to Maryland to play the best team Maryland ever had in their whole life.
Exactly. Yeah.
Lose those three games, understandably so, and no one has the tornado in Oklahoma, so that's good.
Yeah.
Then you're supposed to play SMU at Keenan Stadium, and 9/11 happens. And we just talked about this game recently on the podcast. So that makes the next game against a really good Florida State team.
Yeah, absolutely.
What in the world happened leading up to that game? What was that game like?
Well, Texas was number three, mm-hmm. okay? We had played hard up at Maryland, but they were very good. And after Willie Parker, I think, ran 60 or 65 on the opening play for a touchdown.
That's right.
We couldn't drop after that. We really could. You know, we just – and I think that I went for it on fourth down at least three times, maybe one of them being a fake punt. But we just could not move the ball on them, and they were really good offensively. They ended up winning the ACC that year. So that was the second game. I mean, Oklahoma, we gave them a tussle in the second half. Darian played a lot in that second half. And then we go out to Texas, and I think this is the turning point. We play well in the first half, and I don't know if we're down 10, down 3 or 10-10. I can't remember exactly, but we played hard. We had a punt return, I think, for a touchdown against us, and we didn't do well in the second half. And I threw a fit in the locker room after the game. We're better than this. We have a chance to be good. We can't keep making the same mistakes over again. We've got to correct, move on. And when we get off this plane back in Raleigh-Durham, let's forget about this game and we're moving on. And I think I either heard or saw or something about the receivers were crying a little bit. They were whining some. And I remember the next meeting that I went in and talked with the entire team, and I said something to the effect, hey guys, some of our players are chirping a little bit about the receivers and not getting thrown the ball or this, that, or the other. Hey, old McDonald had a farm, and chirp, chirp here and a chirp, chirp there. Just catch the ball, will ya? So I didn't throw a tirade a lot, but after that Texas game, I think they knew that I knew that we are good, and we are really good on defense.
Yeah.
Really good on defense. I mean, Mack Brown left me some great players. So he'd been gone, 2 years? So that class of Julius Peppers and Ryan Sims and David Thornton and Errol Hood and Billy
D. Greenwood?
D. Greenwood, and
Quincy Monk.
And all 10, and Dexter later, all 11 of those guys got into the NFL or in camp someplace. Think about that.
Yeah.
Think about that. And two of them, of course, were first-round picks. So we had good defense. We just needed to do something offensively better because we had Sam Aiken, you know, and we had Corey Bailey. We were good enough with our running backs to rotate them through, similar to what they're doing now. Mm-hmm. And we just needed to find a spark. And that's when I talked with Tranquil, and Tranquil agreed with me that we were going to go to the two-headed quarterback. And we were every two series, we were going to rotate Ronald and Darian. Ronald is probably one of the greatest athletes that's ever been here at UNC. But to be honest with you, he could throw the deep ball. He could throw the deep dig. He could throw a deep slant. But if he had to throw a touch pass, it was either in the dirt or 10 feet over the guy's head. I think because of missing spring ball quite a bit, he had just not developed that touch. But he was a phenomenal runner, and he was courageous and a wonderful human being. Still is. So I talked with them both and told them what I was going to do. I don't think either one of them were thrilled, but I mean, hey, it's Darian's chance to play more. And it was Ronald's chance to have a little pressure taken off him.
Looking back on it now, you had said that good first year and then just unable to get it going for a couple more seasons. The next 2 years were really, really tough. Before 2004.
The very, very worst of my life I've ever been involved with.
Looking back on it, what were the challenges there in your mind in those couple of seasons?
Well, first of all, I think this is what happens when the coach is in jeopardy over a couple-year period of time. We just didn't have a lot of talent besides our quarterback and maybe a couple receivers. And once again, we had two or three running backs that we were playing. They were fine. Our offensive line wasn't good. Our defensive line was not even close. Just think, all four of those guys got NFL, went to an NFL camp, two of them number one picks. We had to outscore everybody, and that's hard to do.
If you had known then what you know now, of course we all wish that, would you have made any different decisions in terms of assembling that first staff?
Yes, I would. Of course I would. But the problem for a guy like me who coached D3 ball for 5 years and turned a football program around with non-scholarship players, going to the NFL, where NFL guys, generally speaking, they like to stay in the NFL. They don't want to go back to college. They don't want to go back to the recruiting part of it.
Right.
So, you know, it took me, number one, Tenuta was not my first pick as defensive coordinator. It was a friend of mine's good buddy that was at Texas A&M who eventually went to coach with Mike McCarthy at the Packers. They were that tight. He held me up for 3 weeks. He was going to be my DC. And I had an older gentleman coming in to be the secondary coach. And when they went to their bowl game and his daddy, R.C. Slocum, says, son, you're not going to North Carolina. You got to stay here with your mama. So I now have to go out after holding that job for him for 3 weeks. And Tenuta had just gotten let go at Ohio State. Good football coach. Good football coach. Probably a good decision for him to go to Georgia Tech, but caught me way out there. And so I struggled with the defensive staff, and I was trying to help as much as I could. But the guy I brought in and Huxtable, Jim Fleming, who's now at Rhode Island, mm-hmm. and doing a really good job up there, they clashed. So we did not have any harmony on the defense. Gary Tranquil was my, I think, 11th interview. And Billy Height from Virginia Tech had told me what a great coach he is. And he just knocked me out. I mean, I had a lot of good interviews, but he just knocked me out. And I just loved his demeanor and always did. And that's, people ask me, what do you miss about coaching these days? I said, but the only thing I really miss is hearing Gary Tranquil call a game through the headset. Guy was fantastic. Really good.
We were talking before we started about that 04 season and just how wild it was. That was the year that had the Miami game and the NC State game, the T.A. McClendon. Do you have memories from that season? It's still, I think, one of the wildest ones in Carolina history.
It's perhaps even more memorable than the Peach Bowl and beating Auburn.
Yep.
I mean, me and my wife, Dawn, we were trying to overcome the complex part of this head coaching job at the University of North Carolina and how many people are watching and how many people you need to please. That, I mean, in the way we started, and then we got on that roll, and then we had a loss down at Georgia Tech when Ronald went to a funeral and Darian played the whole game. I'm going, I thought this would be great for Darian. But we struggled a little bit defensively, and Darian didn't have his best game, so we lose that game. That was after five straight wins, and that season was great. But the 04 season, the way that our players competed after having some lopsided losses up at UVA in Charlottesville.
Yep.
I mean, we got crushed up there, and I just was devastated with the way we played. And we came back, I think, the following week and got a win. And then, of course, we run into the sledgehammer Louisville and right here in Keenan, and yeah. It is a absolute mess. And to this day, you know, I have a great deal of respect for the university. I love this university. And the bell tower always meant something to me. And I just hang out there on the sideline waiting for that bell tower and the clock to run out so we can get off the freaking field. It's just too ugly.
It was that kind of day.
It hurts so bad. We had the big win versus State. And then I had three players picked up for smoking pot and threw them off the team. And then went after the university to develop a better policy than we had for drug. And we did. Came up with a better policy. I have no idea where it is right now, but to make a long story short, those were good players that were gone from us and were probably future leaders. But to have the ups and downs, the deal out there at Utah, I got very angry with Urban Meyer and what took place. You know, yeah, we're supposed to stop them. But come on, you got an Alex Smith who became the number one pick in the NFL that year, still playing and throwing the ball. And I told Marvin Sanders, the defensive coordinator, I said, hit him. Hit that quarterback. Get him. Throw him on the ground. And I don't care. That's the one time that I would not shake a guy's hand. I said to Gary Tranquil, I'm not gonna shake his hand. I'm gonna hit him right in the mouth. And Tranquil talked me out of that.
Another good play call there by Gary Tranquil.
So I went across the field and he started to reach his hand out, and I didn't poke him in the chest, but I put my finger up and I said, you'll get yours someday. And I think that happened about 45 years ago when they got crushed by somebody. And I called a bunch of people. I think I text messaged Gary Tranquil and said he got his day.
I told you it was coming.
Now, speaking of these entertaining coach relationships, one of the most consistent storylines was the Carolina-NC State rivalry and the John Bunning-Chuck Amato relationship. What was it like to live through the middle of that and just what was that like?
Well, first of all, it's nice that we were able to beat them, even in my last year as a fired head coach, lame duck coach. So our players got fired up for State. Now, we beat them the first year when the quarterback was a freshman or a sophomore. I can't remember.
I think he was a sophomore. Yeah, in 01, he was a sophomore.
I mean, he put on a show that day, but we were so good on defense. We got some pressures, and he wasn't able to throw the ball as well as he normally did, but we got a big win. I remember all the NFL scouts are in there the next day to watch our guys, and somebody said to me about the quarterback. What's his name again?
Philip Rivers.
Nobody's going to want him with that throwing motion. I said, just watch how he throws it, how many completions he gets. He's a great quarterback. Now, we didn't beat him again until Rivers left, and then the 04 thing came around. But with Chuck, he is an enigma. I mean, he was a different guy, and he didn't mind looking different, being different. And he had the voice that you had to make fun of. And he had the big barrel chest that you had to make fun of. But, our players got up for State. Chuck was, I think, a decent head coach, and I'm sure a very good motivator and a very good recruiter. Mm-hmm. He recruited well. He did it at Florida State, and he did it there. But he was just a weird duck to talk to. And I had experiences in coaches' spring meetings and other places, and we didn't converse very much. But the game over at State in 05, when there is a confrontation as the State players are coming out of their tunnel and our linebackers are down in the end zone. And I did not see it, but Marvin Sanders runs up to me. He goes, "Coach, that's all bullshit. You know, don't worry about it. Our guys, they behaved. They were the ones that were attacking our guys." I said, "Holy smokes, you know, what am I going to do now?" You know, and I start to walk out the midfield, and here comes Chuck. He's coming over, and I can't understand a word he's saying. He's talking so fast in that high-pitched voice. I've never seen that like my life. And I said, "Chuck, calm down. Calm down. What do you really want to say to me? I just don't like what's going on down there." I said, "The players are separated now. We're going to play the football game, okay? Let it go." So, now, a lot of people don't know this. When he went back to Florida State, he developed, I believe, throat cancer.
Correct.
And I got his phone number on him, and I called him just to wish him well. I think he was shocked. He got well, and he coached for another bunch of years, I think, at Akron. And I think just retired a year or two ago. So good for him.
When you called him, did you tell him that TA wasn't down?
I'll let you know. I really think he got in that time.
That was hilarious, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, TA did not get – I mean, his knee was down clearly on the 2-yard line. Ball hadn't crossed.
Nope.
In the next play, it's out.
Khalif Mitchell, isn't that who?
Oh, got the, my. Yeah. There's another
nightmare.
So I actually want to – what do people not understand about being the head coach at somewhere like North Carolina? You mentioned the relationship with the administration and trying to keep so many people happy. What do people not understand about all those stresses that isn't just coaching football?
Well, because it is not just the head coach.
Yeah.
I mean, number one, the head coach has got to be the number one recruiter, and that's why it's so great to have Mack Brown back. He's such a great recruiter. And number two, it's you know, for me and my wife, who was at this building every single day, we were co-head coaches here. And we entertained as well as we could all the people in the administration and recruiting weekends and all that kind of stuff. It's just a different type of feeling when you're not winning. And in 02 and 03 served to show just how bad it can get after having the great first season. And unlike the NFL, I think that if you have a couple miserable seasons in a row, you're probably going to get let go because it does affect recruiting.
Yeah.
And we know, and I couldn't stand this for my staff members that would say, oh, they're killing us, they're talking us down. I said, well, let's shut them up. Let's get the player. Be a better recruiter. Let's win next year. You know, that was my, you know, my answer to those things. We got to get better players. And in 04, we got better. 05 is a shame that we did not have a bowl trip because Matt Baker and the team played pretty much well enough, and then we had opportunities at Georgia Tech, at home against Wisconsin.
Maryland was there.
We were up on Maryland by a
10 points, 14, 10 yeah.
points in the fourth quarter. Marvin had benched the starting corner because he got into a fight with his girlfriend on a cell phone before the game. How about that? How about that story?
Dude, that's the stuff people don't think about.
They, you know, oh my goodness. So that was difficult. That was a real tough one to stomach. And of course, my favorite kicker of all time, Connor Barth, you know, missed one in overtime to keep it going. You know, Matt Baker ran about 30 yards to get down to about the 4 or the 5 yard line. And we have timeouts, but I don't want that. I don't want him hit and fumbling. And he almost got hit in the play before. See how I remember all these bad
things? I'm impressed.
I remember these things.
I mean, I don't dwell on it, but now it's 3rd and 6.
So, you know, I'm kicking the field goal to go into overtime. We're at home. We're going to win this game. We're better than Maryland. But, hey, we missed a chippy, and that's the way it goes. And that team didn't get to a bowl game. We have at least 3 golden opportunities to win a game, to get into a bowl game. And then, of course, the next year is a disaster because you don't have a quarterback.
How difficult was that back half of 06? I can't imagine that you were super pleased to when you knew what the ultimate outcome was going to be to still be here. But I know you loved the place and you loved your kids. How hard was that month and a half or 2 months or whatever it was?
It was very hard in one sense that, you know, you're coaching – a bunch of guys you don't know how they're going to respond. Fortunately, NC State was on our schedule, so you knew that how they'd respond against them. Fortunately, Duke was at the end of the season, which was a barn burner of a game. So those things were hanging out there. But I owed it to my players. I owed it to my coaches to come to work every day and be energetic and to be excited about the great game of football. We had a freshman class that was, for the most part, entirely redshirted. I would go down and periodically see them at study hall to make sure that they knew it wasn't their fault and great things are going to happen here. I would make that attempt to do that. So I tried to have a stiff upper lip and have fun, as much fun as we could, knowing that this was the end. And I think me and the staff did a good job of that.
I was pretty close in proximity to you when you were walking off the field after that Duke game. It was like 45-44 or something, Carolina won over at Wallace Wade. And as you're walking off the field, everybody in the Carolina section is going crazy, and they're cheering you, and you're waving to them, and Coach Bunning. how did you reconcile, these people are all cheering for me and seem really fired up, and I don't have the job anymore?
I think they knew how much I love the university, and they know how much I love the football team. So I think they were just being respectful and sending me out with a bang of some sort. And as I walked off, I said, you know, thank God at last this is over, because it was hard. It was, it was very emotional over those last 5-6 weeks.
We've been lucky enough to have several of your players on the podcast over these last few years, Jason Brown, guys like that. And they don't so much talk about the football stuff as much as they talk about the off-field way you connected with them and the way you tried to relate to them. How did you try to handle the non-football side that now 15, almost 20 years later, they're still talking about?
Well, I think they knew that I was demanding of them to be students and respectful and get a degree and become leaders in the community and of your family. Jay Brown is just a picture of that. He's a wonderful human being. I just think I used to comb the newspapers, mostly, sometimes magazines, for dumb things that athletes do. And Gary Tranquil, every once in a while, he just blast me. He says, Coach Bunning, you spent 15 minutes talking about that jack that did something stupid out there in Seattle. And I said, yeah, because he's an athlete. He's playing for the Seahawks, and he did something dumb. They need to see that if you want to smoke pot, you know, do it, you know, after you're finished playing the game, okay? Right now you're going to get tested. So don't put yourself in jeopardy. Hey, guns. I hate guns. I still hate guns. I'm scared of guns. And, I'd give them articles about that. And every once in a while, I'd throw them a bone with a great article. Just trying to shed light on what it's like to become a man here. Because you're not a man when you come in here. As we used to say, after they get here, you have to de-recruit them, you know, for at least a year. To get them to come back down out of the clouds, because everybody's been telling them how great they are for such a long time. So that was a big piece of what our program was about. And Rick Steinbacher bought into it. Corey Holiday bought into it. I mean, our kids were going up to Children's Hospital here on Fridays during the season, off season, doing things with Special Olympics. That I did that at Glassboro. You know, I did that with non-scholarship players. It worked. It brought the players together. They became leaders, and many of them became coaches, I think because of some of the things that we did with them, trying to them to become leaders in the community, and that's a big piece of what we were about.
How much have you kept up with Carolina? Was it hard to watch Carolina right when you left because you knew it so well, and has time cleared that up a little bit?
You're going to have to edit this out.
That's fine. That's okay. Good.
Steve Logan, who I interviewed for the offensive coordinator job before I took Frank
Cignetti.
And in a lot of ways, I wanted Logan. As a matter of fact, I had Dick Bedore come over to listen to be part of the interview process. But I thought Steve Logan, East Carolina, coming to North Carolina, just doesn't work. Steve Logan called me after things went down, and he said, Coach Bunning, I've got to tell you this. The first thing you got to do when the season's over, put that house up for sale. Get out of town. Because every time they talk about recruiting, every time they talk about the program and where it's at, every time it's got to be like,
you are right. I will have to edit that part.
Good story, though.
Yes.
Yes.
And a true story. But, I mean, that was a great statement by him to me. And it was tough. And there will always be part of me that will be disappointed that we couldn't have continued. And my wife is probably a little bit more competitive than I am, and I'm pretty competitive. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, she didn't want to come back to Chapel Hill ever again. And I think that's kind of broken down a little bit, and she may or may not come back. But we played our hearts out for the program, and I have no regrets at all. Maybe a few disappointments and a couple close games. I mean, that's what things turn on sometimes. That's the way it is.
So how did you get to the point where it was okay to love Carolina again?
It took, I think, over a year or maybe even two. But my love for North Carolina will never change. Roy being back here and loving Carolina basketball like I always did Dean Smith. I mean, those guys, you know, Dean Smith came over here and helped me recruit, you know. Bill Guthridge took me to lunch after everything went down. Just class guys. North Carolina, in my mind, has always been class. And I go with the flow. I was not very happy with the guy that succeeded me. I don't think, and I'm not going to go there any further than that, but I was hopeful that Fedora would continue to win. And I had a good relationship with him. But things weren't going well. Something's got to change. And I think the decision to bring Mack Brown back here is just great. And his decision to get back in, I think, is just absolutely amazing. I think it's a great love story.
What Adam and I thought we would do today is, since we are getting more and more entrenched into brand new Pod World headquarters, we thought we would give you, Adam, I'll call this a virtual tour,
right,
of Pod World headquarters.
It's like when Mr. Rogers comes in and he's changing his shoes and putting on his cardigan, and you see all those familiar things around Mr. Rogers. We're going to tell you about the things that are around Mr. Rogers, except Mr. Rogers isn't here. It's Jones.
And Adam. Yeah.
Yeah.
We are both wearing cardigans, though.
And I'm going to change my shoes,
yeah,
because we've got lots of options.
So, Adam, I'm going to let you take the lead on this.
All right.
And guide us through, because you've done some journalistic work to get us prepared for this moment.
Yeah, I think we'll just go in order in which they appear in Pod World headquarters. Now, you have to understand that all these items are displayed on some finely crafted shelving.
Well, let me just say, whoever was responsible for getting this shelving did a wonderful job.
And it looks like it took a while.
Hard work was put into these shelves.
So,
and as we recently learned, Adam, these shelves can support a human being.
Yeah.
Which, I'm going to be honest with you, Adam, I was a little worried about when it was happening.
I did not think that was going to last.
Me neither.
But it did.
Thank goodness.
So we now know what the limit is, I'm guessing.
about 190.
So we have the shelves in Pod World headquarters. At the top of one shelf is a Tar Heel football helmet.
You know, so that was in old Pod World headquarters.
Yes. Where did it come from?
I don't know. I remember.
Did you take it from Jordan Tucker?
It doesn't have the. It's several generations old.
Yep.
I guess, is it the Butch Davis era, Adam? Is it pre-Butch Davis?
It could be Coach Bunning.
I think it might be Coach Bunning, because that's about the time frame I received it, was, I would say, mid to late 2000s. And right in that Bunning to Butch transition time period, somewhere in there. I don't know how I have it or why I have it. I just know I've had it for a while.
Well, and I think the fact that it is accompanied by a tiny football with the UNC now, Stairstep logo.
Yes.
That's impressive.
Now, I do know where that one came from.
The 70s.
The 90s, actually, but close. So, I don't know if they did this at your high school, but they would throw out, the cheerleaders would always throw out little tiny footballs like that. It was either at halftime or maybe when the Fighting Cardinals from JHS scored a touchdown.
Sure, which was often.
Yeah. They would throw them into the crowd. Everybody loved it. I remember growing up, like when I was little, going to the high school games, and you, dude, you wanted these footballs,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
So I have a million of those that are JHS Cardinal.
Mm-hmm.
But my sister was in college, and I asked her to get me one of those type of footballs here at Carolina. And so she went to, well, Chapel Sportswear wasn't around at that point in time yet. So, you know, maybe like another place that sells things on Franklin Street. And she got me one. I remember she was really mad that she had to do it too. She listens to the pod. Why were you mad about that?
That's not something to get mad at. That was an honor.
Brotherly love.
Yeah.
So and there look, it is.
Now it's in the highest possible place of honor.
Yeah. I mean, Christian Keeling walked by that the other day.
And it's lasted. I mean, what, she was in college 5-6 years ago. And you've still got it.
2018 grad.
Yeah. So then the shelf below the football shelf, we have the Aguoma Iguanas. Now, you have to be a longtime pod listener to understand about the iguanas. And specifically, I would say you need to go back to the January 9th, 2018 pod. That is when the iguanas were brought to our attention.
Somewhere in that time period.
Yeah. I might miss this by a little, except I won't. January 9th, 2018. If you remember, this was the story about the iguanas who had gone into the iguana coma because of the cold weather. But they were just in, they were like Han Solo in carbonite.
Yep.
They weren't really gone. They were just resting. And someone, a ne'er-do-well, was going to transport some iguanas across the border to where they are a delicacy. But what this gentleman didn't think about is when the iguanas were traveling in the backseat of his car in their state of suspended animation, they were going to warm up.
That's right. They warmed up and they woke up. That is such a funny story. Gotta get back in time. Gotta get back in time. As we all know, it has been very cold. And it's been very cold here in Pod World headquarters today. It's been very cold, really, across this fine nation of ours, Adam, including our friends down in the Sunshine State. So I saw this article. Well, I saw two things. First, I saw a news report where these iguanas, which I guess live in Florida, iguanas, when it gets to be a certain temperature, they're not dead, but they almost look like they are because their body functions slow down so much because they're protecting themselves from the cold that they're almost in like a coma, for lack of a better word.
An iguana coma.
Yeah. Iguoma. And so these iguanas were going into their iguoma and would fall out of trees in Florida. And so there'd just be like random iguanas on the sidewalk or in the yards, or they're like rigid. And so they appear like they're dead, but they're not dead.
I'm going to tell you something that I don't even want.
A rigid iguana?
Iguanas falling out of trees.
Yeah.
I do not even want this.
So these iguanas apparently were falling out of trees and hitting people or landing in yards. And so
no,
it's just,
thank you.
You know, crazy.
Uh-uh.
And so apparently iguanas are a delicacy somewhere in like Central America. Some guy decided he was going to collect all these Iguoma iguanas, load them in his car, and I guess hit the black market of selling these iguanas to Nicaragua or whatever for food.
Nicaragua's gone from like the Iran-Contra affair to buying black market iguanas.
Hey, Nicaragua, hey, this is Jim in Orlando. So he's got a car full of Iguoma iguanas.
But he thought they were dead.
I guess he thought they were dead.
He didn't know his iguana anatomy.
Right. So Jim, with the chilly weather outside, has his, you know, car at a comfortable temperature. Well, here's the problem, Adam. When the iguanas get their body temperature back up, they snap out of the iguoma. And so all of a sudden, almost like a zombie movie, this dude's car suddenly is filled with reanimated iguanas. Causing, not surprisingly, a car accident.
Yeah.
So the whole point of the story is, if you are a pod listener in Florida, first of all, how are you? Secondly, don't pick up a stiff iguana and load your car with Iguoma iguanas, because they're going to come back to life. And can you imagine? Like, I really do imagine it would be like a movie where he's driving and he's like, he's so happy with himself, but he's a little nervous because, right, you know, it's, but he's like, oh man, I have fooled the system here, dude. I've got 40 dead iguanas and I'm going to go sell them and I'm going to make a fortune. And then all of a sudden, you know, kind of like he's like glancing in the rearview mirror, checking behind him, and he thinks he sees one move, but he's like, oh, that can't be. Jim, just stay focused. Don't get worried about it. He's driving. And then all of a sudden, like, one of them's like right there on his shoulder or something. It's like, I'm guessing iguanas hiss. I don't know. But he's like, and then he's like, dear God, you're crazy. And he runs into a tree or something, shaking loose other dead iguanas. Iguoma iguanas.
I'm an iguana down in Galapagos. I'm an iguana. Seaweed, I like the moss.
Who gave us the Iguoma iguanas? Was it the Montross family?
I think that's right.
I feel like they may have provided those.
I think it might have been Mrs. Big Grits.
Yeah, Mrs. Big Grits is a big pod listener, what up, and she gave us a bunch of nice things for Pod 100, and I feel like the Iguoma iguanas were sometime in that time period. Well, and if that's wrong, then the person who actually gave us the Iguoma iguanas, just joking, we respect you a lot. Thank you.
Also from Mrs. Big Grits, I believe.
Oh yeah,
was
no
the,
doubt on
the
that
sign
one
that accompanies the Iguoma iguanas that says Cookout Pod World Headquarters, so that everyone knows exactly where they are.
Yep.
Now, you go one shelf down, what I like to call the temperature control shelf.
Yeah, so here's a little secret about Pod World Headquarters. And Adam, sadly, when I first came in here, one of the selling points of my excitement was that I had my own thermostat in here.
Right.
And I was like, whoa, I can control the temperature in this one space in the world. It's mine. But then I find out somehow it's controlled by like the man. So someone up on campus.
Kevin Guskowitz is up there going, crank it up in the Pod World headquarters. Ha ha.
Those boys talked about my dog again. Crank it up. So someone else controls the temperature. And I don't know who he or she is. I don't know where he or she resides or how they know what temperature I want it to be here.
Right.
Or if they can actually change it. Because we did something in this room before we were fully in. We used the space itself and it got to be like a million degrees. And remember, I kept walking up and trying to turn it down. I was like, sorry, awesome podcast. I can't seem to get this to turn down.
It's usually much more temperate in here. Yeah, so we don't, they've given us limited power in this room, but it doesn't extend to adjusting our own temperature.
No.
I don't have that privilege at home either, so I'm very comfortable with that role.
They can only give us so much.
Right. So on that shelf, we have some of the Carolina Blue sodas.
I poured the sodas out.
I think that's the right move.
Remember how everybody warned us that those are 93 sodas, right?
I think so.
Everybody warned us that eventually they were, Adam is getting up. This is the kind of freedom we have in the new Pod World headquarters. He can just get up in the middle of the pod, return to his
I am back.
Studio quality microphone. Remember, everybody warned us that their old sodas would cut through the cans and spill everywhere, and I didn't want that to happen.
That makes you feel good about putting it in your body.
Yeah.
Like, it'll cut through aluminum, but as far as my liver, it's fine.
Doesn't stay in there for two decades,
yeah,
Adam.
My liver's tougher than aluminum.
Yeah, you've put that, we put that liver through a lot in our days. Yeah.
And then we've got a couple of the other Coca-Cola championship products.
Fine sponsor of the Tar Heel Sports Network. Got a 17 championship Coke. We should get a, that should just be our Coke champ. Do you have any 82 championship Cokes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, why don't you bring one?
I should.
And put it on the shelf.
And then what else would we need? We'd need, is there an 09 up there? We might need an 09.
Yeah, we
need. Is there such thing as an 09?
And 05. Really, we're not doing very well. We have 93 and 17.
Have you got any 57 Cokes?
1924. Can I get a Shasta or whatever was around in 1924?
I might have a 1957 Tab. Red Patio Cherry or whatever it was.
I want
another throwback.
A Dr. Pepper.
All right, then you go down to what I refer to on our incredibly well-made shelving as goose level.
There's a lot of geese down here. I said gooses a couple pods ago.
That's fine. People
yeah.
knew.
Yeah.
The first item we come to, this bowl has, it's a goose bowl, and it has many geese who are aligned beak to neck. And you can put things in.
They're pledging a goose fraternity, Adam.
It does kind of look like it. You can put items in the goose bowl. Right now, we don't have any in there, but we've got a couple ideas. This particular goose bowl was given to us by a listener who, if I recall correctly, wished to remain anonymous. Other than I think it's fair to say she makes excellent cheese straws and loves the pod. Now, next to goose bowl is an item we know and love very well.
This is either going to be the dumbest pod we've ever done.
Yes.
Or the greatest pod.
Tar Heel Bird.
Yeah. What's up, Tar Heel Bird?
Tar Heel Bird guided the Tar Heels to several wins.
At the end of the 18 season.
Yes. That was first mentioned to us in a tweet on February 9th, 2018. Give or take a day or two, but not really.
Don't I know it.
Then we got the full explanation of Tar Heel Bird. You can hear that on the February 13th, 2018 pod. Get back in time.
What up goes to Tar Heel Bird, Adam? I think I have the story right. Tar Heel Bird and Tar Heel Bird and Mr. Goose Honkers, by the way, different folks.
Right.
This is a very aviation-friendly podcast, pro-aviation. Tar Heel Bird was created by Matt's daughter, just for giggles, you know, and was placed under the TV starting with the Duke game.
It's like an origami bird.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. It's like a paper bird.
Right.
That says Tar Heel Bird on its wings. Tar Heel Bird, Adam, has got quite a streak going.
Oh, well, everybody's heard about the bird. Bird. The bird's a winner. Well, the bird. Bird is a winner. Well, don't you know about the bird? Well, everybody knows that the bird is a winner. Well, the bird. The bird's a winner. Well,
and then after Tar Heel Bird had guided the Tar Heels on the winning streak, it was presented to us by Matt Trudwind in the cradle of the ACC, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
At the ACC tournament on March 7th.
I remember during that hot streak, we kept saying that Tar Heel Bird wasn't allowed to move. Don't move the bird.
It was sitting on top of the TV, I think.
Yeah. And then I distinctly remember Tar Heel Bird sitting on the equipment at the ACC tournament staring at the floor.
Yeah.
As the Tar Heels made a run to the championship game.
Yeah, it sat right there. All the players would come over and rub it for good luck before the game. Yeah. Coach Williams tucked it into his jacket pocket.
Be like, Luke May, look, I know you're having a all-ACC caliber season, but you may need a little extra bird love.
You might want a blue origami bird that says Tar Heel Bird on it. We have another stuffed goose next. Oh, sorry, no. We've got a baby goose next to Tar Heel Bird. That was given to us by a listener.
Yep.
Now, you might be wondering, if you're a newfangled pod fan, where did all this goose stuff come from? Now, this blew my mind. It used to be that Storytime had a different song.
Really?
I had forgotten that. Did you remember that?
No, not at all.
The first couple of story times had the Gather Round song.
I do remember
Please
that.
Please Sit Down.
Yeah.
And when I first heard that, I didn't understand what was happening. It wasn't Mr. Goosehawker.
Shh, be quiet. Please sit down. Please sit down. Please sit down. Shh, be quiet. Please sit down. Listen, listen, listen.
The January 26th, I didn't write down the year, but I think it was 2018. That is the pod that introduced the idea of Mr. Goosehawkers. And then it really got cemented in pod lore on January 30th when Downton Shabby sent us. Remember the Mr. Goosehawkers recruiting file?
Yes.
Has a lot of foul trouble.
Yeah, that's funny.
And one of his weaknesses was he's a goose.
So I do remember distinctly that we had the music, and then I was trying to find something happened on my computer and the yep. file got corrupted.
Yes.
And then I couldn't remember what the name of the song was.
Yep.
And so I searched children's music and it came up and it was the same song. And then the actual name of the song was Mr. Goosehawkers.
Yes.
Yeah, I do remember that.
But in my mind, that had always been the Storytime music, but it wasn't. It was Storytime started with the Please Sit Down song. We've moved on since then. So we've got a couple more geese there next to Tar Heel Bird. We've got Baby Goose and Big Stuffed Goose wearing Tar Heel sweater.
Yeah, he does. What a dapper goose.
He's a proud goose. He looks
Alexander Julian would be happy with that goose.
He's almost regal, I think it's fair to say. And then next to King Goose, we have the miniature urinal.
Let me just say, we had a friend of the pod, Matt Terrell, gave us the mini urinal to help christen the new Pod World Headquarters. He said he knew we just wouldn't be comfortable doing interviews without a urinal nearby. And so every time we look at the mini urinal, Adam, we can think about Mobile Pod World Headquarters.
And I do. Now, next to the mini urinal, really these two things don't go together at all. We have Director of Pod Security, Rusty Cotterman. When we visited the Army-Navy football game last fall, or winter, I guess, which was awesome, he gave us the challenge coin from his unit, which we have.
That's probably the toughest thing that we have in the room, other than us, you and me.
You think that's probably you think that's tougher than the ceramic goose, for example? Probably. You think that's tougher than the stuffed iguana? Yes.
Is it tougher than the origami bird?
Next to the challenge coin, which was presented to us by Director of Pod Security, Rusty, we have kind of a combo of items, perhaps some of the most treasured items on the well-constructed shelves.
Well, if you may remember this, we had an episode of the pod that was dedicated to Woody Durham, longtime voice of the Tar Heels. Of course, we know how important Woody was to me, to Adam, to so many Tar Heel fans. And I don't want to say fortunate. I was honored to be asked to be a part of Woody's memorial service. And at his service, Wes came up, his son, of course, Wes Durham, who Wes, he's on Packer and Durham every single morning. He's been a guest on the pod, one of the main voices of the ACC network, play-by-play voice as well for the Atlanta Falcons. Did Georgia Tech in the past. Wes came up and handed me one of Woody's pins. And we all had this kind of fun inside joke with Woody that he always used the four colored pins. And so you can see this pin in your mind probably. It's half blue, half white, and you can click and use either blue, green, red, or black. And I still use, actually, four-colored pin during basketball as well, because that's how I learned it from Woody, where you do one half in one color and then the second half in the other color, and it helps you keep track of the stats. And it's just a very visual way to say, oh, that happened in the first half, this happened in the second half. And Woody would always, he was very fastidious about if the Tar Heels were trailing at halftime, he would always switch pins. And he'd always make, all right, boys, when Tar Heels need a little mojo, I'm going to switch over to the yellow pin or whatever it was. And so it was just kind of something that we all knew about Woody and thought was funny and et cetera. And so Wes gave me that as a kind gesture, just as a very nice and kind gesture that day about his dad. And so we had the pin, and I mentioned that story on a podcast. And then the second half of the item, Adam, that's how the second half came into play.
And we got, it's like I'm going to call it a pin holder, but that doesn't anywhere close to do it justice. And it was from a pod listener named John Gilbert, who had emailed us and said that he heard Jones tell the story that he just told, and we had talked about needing a way to display it. Pin display sounds better.
Yeah.
And so woodworking is one of John's hobbies, so he made this pin display, which we have put Woody's pin in. It's got the NC logo on it. It says mightier than any sword on there. And I got to tell you, it looks really nice.
Yeah, it does. It's great. It's great work. And I mean, if you didn't know what it was, you'd probably go like, what is that? But then it gives us the chance to tell the story. So that is it is displayed proudly here in Pod World headquarters.
Speaking of people who are a lot cooler than us, John Gilbert, a movie stuntman.
Yeah, he is.
Now, next to the pin display, now this was a mystery item for quite some time.
This is, we will classify it in the goose category, even though it is actually a mallard head duck.
Yeah, if you're going to be particular.
But the most important thing, Adam, it's a lamp.
Right.
It's a duck lamp. And the duck lamp was left on my old desk in old Pod World headquarters with a very touching letter about flying free and things like that. And forever it was a mystery. But now we know the answer. It comes from the man who owns probably the only man who can give us a run for our money for the classiest, fanciest office in Chapel Hill, John Montgomery. John Montgomery left us the duck lamp. I don't want to say heirloom. I don't know if it was that important. But it was from his family, and it was time for the duck lamp to move on, and he thought, what a perfect place to send it, but to us.
And you had done quite a bit of research trying to find out where the lamp had come from. You had hired a private investigator. You had gone through people's trash, all sorts of things trying to get to the bottom of this, and then one day he just fessed up.
Yeah, I mean, that's a normal Wednesday and Thursday for me normally,
right.
But he finally took it, and the duck lamp is wearing, this was a Christmas spectacular gift from you to me, Adam.
That's right.
The El Paso pins.
Yes. A wide collection of pins bearing all sorts of El Paso slogans and phrases. Jones, of course, wore that as he traveled around El Paso for the Sun Bowl. If you didn't hear all the Sun Bowl stuff, December of 2016 would be what you'd be looking for.
That's early in pod life.
Specifically, December 27th, 2016, we spoke live on the pod to Oscar Leeser. And that was an extension of kind of the conversation we had on the December 6th show. The most important thing that happened with Mayor Leeser is that we asked him about our understanding that there was a law on the El Paso books that every office had to have a spittoon. And he was not sure that was the case.
Yeah. That law may have been outdated.
He was sure that El Paso really, really rocks.
Yeah. That we can all confirm.
Yes, El Paso really, really rocks.
He is no longer in office. He's been deposed.
That's a shame.
I can't remember if I said the episode If you're interested in, and I'm sure we told the story about Woody's pen. We actually did an episode from Woody's office, and Jean Durham, his lovely wife, was on that episode. That was August 17th, 2018. Hopefully you're making a list of all these, yeah, and you're going to go back this weekend and listen to every single one of them.
Yeah, no football game, no basketball game. So
you've got nothing to do,
yeah,
except listen to hours and hours of old pods. Next to Goose Lamp, European Skittles.
Yeah, we got two bags of European Skittles.
Yeah, and neither have been opened, unless I'm mistaken.
Oh, yeah, I feel like they need to be preserved.
Yeah. So those have the original Skittle flavors in them, except for the one weird one. What, like
black currant?
Black currant, yeah. So we don't know how we feel about black currant.
And they're called fruits.
Yeah, they're not candies. They're fruits. That means they're healthy. Next to the fruits, somewhat of another mystery item, in all honesty, a box of grape nuts.
I remember that we talked about grape nuts, and I remember that friends of the pod, Sandra and Steven Rich, brought me the very next night, I think, or the next week at a radio show, they brought me a box of grape nuts because we had been talking about grape nuts. But Adam, for the life of us, neither you nor I can remember why we did that.
I strongly feel that that was in the first fall of the pod, but I have listened...
Wild West days. Yeah. Who even knows what was happening?
I think maybe this episode must be on some old reel-to-reel tapes or something, because I can't find it anywhere, but that was the...
David Daly's got the...
Yeah, that's right. I think the ACC office lost it. That was the first time I remember realizing that people were actually listening when they brought you the grape nuts.
Yeah.
Because I thought we were just in here talking, kind of like when we were in Pod World headquarters, new Pod World headquarters before it was turned on, and we would just talk, but it wasn't actually being recorded.
Right.
That's kind of what I thought was happening that first fall of the pod. But then when the Riches brought you the grape nuts, that brought it home.
You knew it was real then.
So if anybody knows what episode that was, we'd love to know. Moving up the shelves now, on the opposite side, the championship shelf for hoops. Now, this is a nice, this is good symmetry right here, Jones, because it's same level with our championship Coke products.
Yeah.
Did you do that on purpose?
Yes. So it's got a 2008 regional championship hat.
Right.
And a 2009 national champ. I didn't get a 17.
Nope.
But in 09, they came over to the radio area and just handed us hats.
I didn't get Jack.
Plus, I've got the Ruskin Babushka dolls that are the Tar Heels. That was...
We've talked about that on here before.
My father-in-law bought it in Russia, and it's the little dolls that just... The stacking, the nesting dolls.
Yeah.
And it's the 05 starting lineup. And he said the three teams that were available were Carolina, Virginia, and ECU in Russia. That didn't make any sense. Then there's a piece of net wrapped around it. Adam, I am somewhat convinced that that net is from my women's basketball play-by-play days when the women won the ACC tournament the second year I was doing play-by-play for the women's basketball team, and Ivory Ladder or somebody cut off a piece of net and came and gave me a piece, I think. Now, it could also be Jared Haas gave me a piece of net one time for a Tar Heel, big Tar Heel victory. So it's one of those two nets. I don't know which one, though.
We could run DNA testing on it.
Yeah.
And try to find out for sure.
But it is more now, Adam, it's a symbolic of,
right,
of success.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Moving up the shelves further. Now, these items were gifted to us recently. We have the Tar Heel basketball game ball, Nike with the NC stamped on it.
Pretty sweet.
That's what I use when I go out and hoop it up at lunchtime. And then a couple different selections of Tar Heel Jordans.
Let me just tell you, and I told you this, of all the things in Pod World headquarters, I'm glad we have the laser security
right
around the shoes, because I'm most worried about someone wanting those shoes.
Well, I think they would want them until then the German Shepherds were unleashed, yeah, and dragged them down,
yeah,
and waited until the authorities arrived.
One of the things that we have started to do here in Pod World Headquarters that we want to continue to do is get stuff from all the teams. So we actually just recently received at the display case behind Adam, we have a basketball jersey, which is awesome. And then we also, Justin, we haven't even staged this yet. We received a Carolina baseball batting helmet, Carolina blue with the white NC. We've got some sweet baseball cleats and a baseball jersey. And Adam, I think it would be fun to try to get something from all the teams or as many teams as we can, get some kind of unique piece from, you know, a field hockey stick or an oar from the rowing team or, you know, something from all the different teams of Carolina. I think it'd be cool to be able to display those in here.
Well, rowing's going to name the boat after us.
Right, yeah.
So they'll give us the boat when it's won all the races it's going to win, and then we can hang that from the ceiling right above us, the good ship Jones and Adam right here, because, of course, we've got vaulted ceilings in Pod World Headquarters.
We really do.
Come on. Of course, along with the mahogany. So we've got plenty of room for the good ship Jones and Adam, but then I do think we would like to have stuff from every sport, and because Carolina's got the broad-based program, so far we've only got football, basketball, baseball. That's only three.
Yeah, we need a lot more.
We've got a couple dozen to go.
And we've reached out, Adam's reached out to some other programs to see if there might be something. But how cool would it be to get a soccer ball and to get, you know, a kit? We know it's called a kit.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. All right, and Adam, that really, unless I'm missing something, that leaves us with what I consider, quite honestly, the crown jewel of the room.
I think that's right. And I think not just in size, but in meaning.
Yeah.
So we have these two windows in Pod World, like interior windows in Pod World Headquarters, and we're not really sure why they're there. And also, we don't like people that much. So we don't want anyone looking in and trying to see what we're doing because that's our business, not theirs.
Which, quite honestly, is a little troublesome considering every wall in Pod World Headquarters is glass.
Yeah, that is true. It's like a little zoo in here. So to cover up one of them, and also for sound purposes, but mostly to keep the watchful eyes away, we have this giant canvas with the Carolina Insider logo on it, which I gotta say, that's a classy logo.
It looks good.
And so we've left plenty of white space around the logo. And anytime someone comes into Pod World Headquarters to be on the pod, we're going to have them sign the canvas.
And if we ever have any future or past guests that come through, we're snagging them and getting them to sign it. There's no way, Adam, I just don't see logistically how we can make it happen that every past pod guest can sign it. But anyone that we get the opportunity to come back and sign, we're going to have it.
Can you imagine if I had to take that with me to go talk to Bill Walton and explain to him why I would need him to sign this canvas?
George Lynch, we are flying to Atlanta with this giant canvas. We just need you to meet us at the airport and sign it real fast.
If you've been on the pod...
We have to wait because I had to check it.
If you've been on the pod prior to yesterday and you know you've been on the pod and you haven't signed the canvas, we want you to come by and sign the canvas.
Yeah, we want it signed.
Christian Keeling was the first current Tar Heel to do so. Yeah. It seemed like it was an emotional moment for him, Jones.
Well, it was. I think it was still a little overwhelming because there's so much white space still to sign.
Yeah, a lot of choices.
He didn't want to go overboard.
Right. I wonder if anyone's ever going to sign on the NC.
It would take a gutsy play to make it happen.
I wouldn't do it.
No.
But perhaps like a Roy Williams? He possibly could. We're going to take pictures of all this stuff, and when people sign the canvas also, and we'll post those so that you can see them and have a little better understanding of what we're talking about. And we've got more room because we got a lot of shelving. So if you've got that goose item that you think belongs with its other flock, just send it our way.
In all seriousness, we are excited to be in here. We're not quite 100% done. We still need some soundproofing to be put up so that the sound will be better. There's a couple software things that need to happen for us to record exactly the way we want to. But we've been able to get this far, Adam, and it's been we're excited about being in here.
It really is nice, and we certainly appreciate the opportunity to do it. And the only reason we can do it is because people listen and are nice enough to send us stuff like the stuff we've been talking about.
So, we have a Lot to do next week. We will officially tell you what happened during this Pittsburgh football game. We will have a basketball update as well. Tar Heels against Gardner Webb tonight. And we'll have the recap of that. And looking ahead to the next action for the Heels, heading to the Bahamas soon. We'll talk about that, have some more great guests. But for now, we're going to let John Bunning and the RZA send us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm John Bunning, and see you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.